If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We are back with the Death Lineup, the podcast that covers both the Golden State Warriors and the Golden State Valkyries, all in the same show. Our Warriors segment is called the Death Lineup, and our Valkyrie segment is called Pod Holla. Now, with the Valkyrie stuff, because we are in this weird space with CBA and negotiations, like, did you ever think that you would know so much about the CBA and the player side, the union side, and the ownership side? And it seems like I have a pretty good, actually, handle on what's going on right now just because of the stuff I've been reading and listening to.
I mean, I guess not, but you know, you've been following sports for a long time. How many times have you seen this in your lifetime where you felt like you were really in it? Because, of course, I remember the NBA one in, like, what, 2011? Or when was it?
Yeah, whenever they remember, they started the season on Christmas because they had that lockout. So what's, you know, it's always going to be about money, and baseball is going to have this in not at the end of this year, but at the end of next year. Owners always want some sort of cap. They want to control salaries. And really what it's about is they want to be able to control each other, because owners cannot control themselves. And so that's what the baseball one really is about. And it's also because they have just some smaller markets that they cannot earn as much money as some of these other teams. But here it's so different. And we won't start with this. I kind of wanted to hint a little bit about what we're going to talk about. So we'll cover this in our Podhala segment. But what I want to talk about in that segment isn't necessarily who's right or who's wrong, but really about the moment. Because this is what they've been waiting for. And when push comes to shove, both sides gain no matter what. And so it's really about the players being able to flex their leverage, maybe for the first time ever, knowing that they won't be able to do this again for a little while. And I guarantee you, the fear for them in giving in right now is in 5 years, the sport is going crazy, and they are not earning nearly what they should be. I guarantee you that's their fear. So we'll talk about that in a second. We are going to kick off with some Golden State Warriors first. Let's hit the Death Lineup. All right, so in our preview episode, the one before our last Death Lineup episode, we kind of talked about, like, having really high expectations for this team, just because I think we both really like the roster, but also at the same time knowing that you have to really have a lot of luck with the injuries. Not that the injuries are not going to happen, because they are going to happen at some point, but the luck being that they kind of have to happen in times where the depth can fill in those gaps. And, like, Steph and Jimmy just can't get injured at the same time for a long period of time, because we know what will happen. Same with, you know, Draymond and Jimmy, or Draymond and Steph. Like, some of that stuff that will happen where they both, you know, two out of those three will have to miss a game here and there, but it can't happen for, like, an elongated period of time. But let's start with this, obviously the hot start, 4-1. Is there anything that surprised you so far in the first five games in how well they're playing?
I think probably the most surprising thing, I mean, there's a list of things, but obviously how good Steph has looked out the gate. And he looked it in preseason. Like, I think I said that after the first preseason game, where he just kind of looks already in midseason form, just the way he can shoot it, the way he can move. I think also I think the obvious one is Kuminga, right? Like, just him being a staple in the starting lineup. Like, I thought that maybe there would be some, like, okay, we want him to be in the starting lineup for the first game, but, you know, maybe eventually he'll transition his way out once Moses comes back. Moses is back, and I think JK is a starter, and he's played that way to earn it. So I think that's been a surprising thing as well, that he's gotten that position, he's going to keep that position, and he's playing well to keep that position. But other than that, I think everything's kind of gone as we would expect. I think that this team is going to play well at the gates, that everyone's basically healthy. And I think we'll have to see when guys are missing games, like that Portland game where Al Horford misses and then it's second night of a back-to-back. Like, how does the team look? And you know, and then that kind of happened again last night against Los Angeles, but instead Horford misses the first of the back-to-back. He misses Memphis instead of Los Angeles, and they whoop the Clippers, which I thought was a really, really good game. And I know the Clippers are still figuring things out as well, but they've kind of had our number for the past year and a half, 2 years or whatever it was. Like, I don't think we've beat them since like the 11-30-23 game. Like, I actually don't know entirely if that's true, but I remember
seven in a row until yesterday.
So that means the 11-30-23 game. Do you remember that? When it was their three numbers, it was Clay's number, Steph's number, and Draymond's number, and they called it the 11-30-23 day because it was on November 30th, 2023. They played the Clippers and they beat them. I've got to imagine that's the last time they won. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's an important game. And I think it was really interesting to see they kind of have their Zubac stopper. You know, like Quentin Post was actually, I thought Quentin Post played really well on him, and I thought when Al Horford played Zubac, it was kind of barbecue chicken for Zubac. So a lot of things. I think we'll just have to see. You know, it's just, you don't want to say it, but it's just giving, it's the 2022 vibes, 2021, 2022 vibe. It's just so clearly like a mirror. Like, you could see the parallels, like memorable moments already. I could think of the amount of memorable moments on like two hands in the past couple years. Like, already this year we have, you know, the Denver game, you could pick a moment from there. The Steph closed in the fourth quarter. The Jimmy.
I think they'll probably mostly be Steph moments because that some of that stuff in the late game in the overtime was just insane.
Yeah, and then even last night, Pod's chase down block on Chris Paul on one end, and then on the other end, reverse lay. Like, that was an insane, like, I jumped out of my seat. And the night before, Draymond gets the flagrant on Santi Aldama. Aldama misses both free throws. Draymond goes absolutely nuts. And that
What was that motion that he was doing? Was he riding a horse? Like, what was he doing?
I don't know. It was just an out-of-body experience for him, I guess. But the following possession, like, Draymond gets everyone all hyped up. So GP2 dives on the floor for a loose ball to a fast break lay or a dunk or whatever it was. There's already so many moments to start the season. Whereas, you know, in the CP3 year, I could think of, they beat the Celtics because CP3 got like an offensive rebound or just passed it to Steph and Steph shot a moonball three and it went in and they beat the Celtics. Like, that's the only one I could think of really from that year. And then from last year, before Jimmy got there, it's just them beating the Mavericks and Steph looking at the camera and being like, you didn't want to stay, like, to Clay, right? Like, there's just not that many of those vibes moments that you could already just kind of see this year. I could already count three or four of them and I expect them to continue. And that was the same with 2021, 2022. So I think we just have to see once these guys go out, once, you know, Steph in 2022 goes out for a long extended period of time, JP kind of takes that leap and takes over and is able to hold them. You know, some memorable games against Jimmy Butler's Miami Heat that they won, I remember down the stretch there. So it's just if something like that happens, which I think is just to be expected in a long season, and Pajemski, JK, and Moody take that JP-like leap that he took in 2022 to help them hold their regular season record. And I think they can. I think what they've shown so far has been pretty intriguing, that, you know, especially that Memphis game where Moody can't miss, Pajemski finally finds it, and then JK is just doing what he's been doing all year.
Let's come back to JK because I think his play right now deserves its own little segment here. But you mentioned Pajemski, and Pajemski, I don't know what it is about the start of the season, because I feel like last season he started poorly as well. And these first couple of games, he's like forcing it. He's in the starting lineup and he's like all fired up. He made the comments about wanting to be the guy after Steph retires. And then he just comes out and he just, it was not great. And Steve has since said that depending on the matchup, he wants to start either Pajemski or Quentin Post. And last night was Quentin Post. And I know that Steve Kerr said that he really liked the way Quentin Post played, but I was like, I know Zubac is an amazing rebounder, but do you have to get boxed out on every single opportunity? He did pick up some rebounds, but all the ones where I was like, okay, now let's see him battle Zoo. Nope. Zoo had position. Zoo was like holding him off like with a one arm. I was
Zoo
like,
looks
man.
Like he has like 50 pounds on Quentin Post.
Yeah, he probably does. And I just was like, man, Zoo would be like the perfect.
Dude, I thought Quentin played team. Awesome. I
know he did.
An awesome game.
And the reason he's there is because Zoo does not want to come out. He doesn't want to come out and guard him. So Quentin Post is going to have wide open three pointers, which he had. I think he made four of them. And a lot of times, you know, what does Fitz say about offensive rebounds? Offensive rebounds seems like they always go to the, or I'm sorry, air balls seem like they always go to the offense. And there weren't air balls, but lots of offense balls just bouncing around. Zubac is going for the rebound. The Warriors get it. And who's wide open? Quentin Post. So that stuff works. And you're trading off offense there. And you know that Quentin Post is going to get beat up in the post, but you don't expect him to defend that. Like, you know, every Warriors player is going to get beat up by Zubac in that position. Draymond will probably get the best position, but then he may get some fouls at the same time. So I thought it was great strategy. But still, at the same time, there is this thing with Brandon where he looks the part and he acts the part. And I would say 50-50, it comes through where he's actually playing the part. And yeah. I do wonder what he needs to do or what positions or which lineups are going to be best for him, because he's got a lot of confidence. He takes some wild shots that nobody on the team does. Like he's throwing in some like fadeaway mid-range shots. He's throwing up these crazy floaters that don't always go in. You know, I think he stopped that hook shot that we always would make fun of.
It's true. I haven't seen it this year.
Yeah, but I wonder what it's going to take for him, because I think I would say the last two games he's played pretty darn good. Those first three games were a little bit iffy. I wanted to see him play a little bit better in Portland, because we talked about that Portland game, how I thought they were going to go after the Denver game, knowing that the Portland game was just going to be there and you just let the young kids play. See, that's the game where I wanted Pajemski to say, I'm better than all these guys and I'm going to show it. And it didn't really happen. So I'm trying to be very open-minded with pods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to be an additive player this year. He's been an additive player so far in his first 2 years as well. But you want to see him take that slight step. He doesn't need to take this giant step. But I just want to have more confidence in the team's ability to score when he's a little bit more of the focal point. And I just don't see it. It seems like this offense just stalls out when he's expected to kind of run things.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, you want that will he show up 50-50 thing to kind of transition more to a 75-25. And I think it will. I mean, this is his third year. Sure, he was an older rookie, maybe 20 to 21 when he first came in the league. But I think there's, you know, a reason why the Warriors have liked him, because he kind of figured it out right away and passes the ball and does some silly stuff. But, I think that this is a year where, you know, you could put all those things together. I have confidence that he will be an additive player for more often than not. And if he isn't, I don't think Steve, like, they have depth. He can get kicked to the curb a little bit, and here comes Melton. If Melton looks good coming back, like, they have the depth where the nights that he isn't, you hope that this doesn't happen, but he can be the person that joins TJD and Gui Santos as the odd man out, because they have the depth. And not to mention, you know, even Seth Curry is still looming, even though it feels like they don't need him at all right now. But, you know, he's still a looming ad in November.
And he's really there for the reasons that we said, that we just expect guys to be injured and you just have these depth pieces that are ready to go when that happens. And it seems like Seth is like just okay to be in that role, even if it doesn't account to much. Like, I'm sure his worst nightmare would be him having to play because his brother gets hurt. Like, that's not what he wants to see. He wants to see, you know, he wants to see them healthy and just chipping in here for here and there. Okay, so you mentioned Moses. Moses missed the first couple games. He had a really good game against Memphis. I thought he struggled in some cases yesterday, forcing some stuff up.
I thought he was good.
Yeah, he's going to be solid defensively, I think, all the time. You can see who they have him guard, right? They are very comfortable with him guarding really good wings and ball handlers too.
I think they like those slower paced ball handlers. So not like the really quick ones, but like the Hardens, the Lolu guys, like the Lucas.
He's not guarding Ja. They actually had Kuminga guard Ja, but he will guard. Yeah, he will guard like the high usage guys who aren't really point guards, who are more on the wing side. But they trust him because they know that he's not going to screw it up. He may not get every stop. He may not be the guy who's just the shutdown guy, but he's not going to make a mistake in those.
He's probably not going to foul you on three like GP is every other game.
We're seeing so many of those, by the way. It's kind of getting ridiculous.
I mean, Quentin got one to start, and then they challenged it and flipped it, overturned it, and then a couple possessions later, GP gets it to end the quarter or something like that. I thought the Quentin one was ridiculous. Thank God they called that jump forward thing.
Yeah. So Moses, Pods, you know, I think Moses, we'll have to see. He's only played the two games, but, you kind of know what you're going to get with Moses. And we saw it last year when he's got to start playing power forward in some lineups, and they just trust him in those moments. We talked last time about Will Richard and his opportunity to just get minutes because Melton is not playing right now. And so he's able to get in there. Once Melton is in there, then Will's probably just traveling, but going to be focused on Santa Cruz. So now let's talk about Kuminga. Kuminga, I think yesterday was the first game where he just offensively didn't have everything going for him. Even in the game against Portland, I thought he was kind of like the one guy that you were like, okay, like just let JK do JK stuff, and dunked on who did he dunk on? Who's their big center?
For what team?
For Portland.
Oh, Klingon?
Yeah, just dunked right on his head. And so he has been doing so far in five games everything that they had asked him to be doing for the last 3 years. Right? Yeah. It's almost like this holdout, or not the holdout, but this restricted free agency thing kind of helped crystallize everything that they've ever asked him to do, knowing why they drafted him, knowing his athleticism, knowing what his ceiling could be. And it's almost like year four, I'm going to do all of these things. And you watch him play and you're like, oh, he fits perfectly on this team, actually. Whereas the Kuminga from last year was like maybe the square peg in the round hole on the entire team, like the only guy who didn't really fit. And so now he's like, it's like team is tailor-made for his style of play, playing this way of JK basketball. Like, what, like, can you explain it? Is it just he realized? Is it? It's got to be him, right? Because everyone else is the same, and it's got to be him coming to some sort of conclusions about this is how he has to play basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's him. I think it's Jimmy in his ear. I think it's the way the winning's working right now. Like, it's a lot less of him, you know, ISOing to like mid range. Like, it's a lot less of that, and it's been more of just like, basically doing the winning things that, you know, Aaron Gordon did for the Nuggets and you know, Wiggs did for us at times, although Wiggs kind of had a little bit of that mid-range. But JK has just been using his athleticism to basically at just like at the right moments for them. And yeah, I don't think it's like this is tailor made for his game. I think his game is a little bit adjusted, and you know, he's basically handcuffed to Steph's lineups, right? Like I feel like every time I see him, you know, excelling, I'm like, oh, Steph's in the game too. Like they're like doing like Steph, JK, and Buddy as like the unit after the Draymond Jimmy Pods one. And so, you know, I don't know. It was a wild summer, and you probably go watch that Minnesota game back, and it's probably completely different levels of, and of course what they needed from him was to score the basketball, but just watching, that's what he wanted to do, and that's what we thought he wanted to do in the summer. We thought he wouldn't be okay with this, basically what he's doing. Not that he's taking a complete backseat role, like he's still getting numbers, but it's not like the, you know, we thought he wanted to do like a lot of that ISO mid-range stuff. And maybe he never said that out verbatim. I don't think he ever said that, but it just seemed like he wanted that opportunity, because that opportunity is the ones that kind of make the big money, and you're the all-star. And like Kuminga will probably never be an all-star if this is kind of what his role looks like, but they win. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like we're kind of still in the, like, is he going to be okay with this? I think so, just because they're winning. But I'm telling you, go watch that Minnesota game, and you go watch what they do against the Clippers in Memphis. Like, I think it's just a completely different, you know, way he touches the ball and what he does with it.
I wonder, like you said, I wonder the same thing, which is this sustainable? And it seems like he's being very intentional in rebounding. And I wonder, very clear that he believes that that is part of his role in these lineups, is they need to get rebounds. So he's like, I can get these rebounds. I mean, he's skying for these rebounds. But I also wonder if it's an opportunity for him to rip and run and just go, right? He gets the rebound. He's so athletic. He's one of the faster players. He can get down the court faster than anybody else. But he's not doing it every time. You'll see him, if he doesn't see an opportunity, he is trying to get it to a ball handler so then he can get down. But it is exciting to see him go after the boards, because he's an entertaining rebounder, I guess you could say, because he jumps the highest of anybody. And he's like ripping these things down, like out of the air. And I think that's energizing him. That's he's getting the ball and then he's busting it down court. And because he is doing rebounding, which is a selfless kind of job, it's like the vets are like, hey, man, we need to show him that he's doing this and it's best for the team. And we're going to repay him for doing it. So it's almost like he sees rebounding as a way to earn the respect so that he gets his, you know, they're looking for him after that. So I think a lot of this is just related to his rebounding. The rebounding is the thing that stands out to me, because I don't know if we've ever seen this from him before.
Yeah. I mean, we said it on this podcast, like you asked who after that Lakers game, I think that was the last time we recorded was after the Lakers game. And the first one. And you said, guess who led the team in rebounds, and it was JK. And I was like so shocked that that wasn't more of like a headline on more of like the, you know, the reporting stuff from the Warriors. But it's been impressive, and it's a clear focal point. And I don't know if you heard Plus Minus at all today. I listened to it on my drive.
I listened
home,
to like half of it.
Did you hear the part where TK was like, I had a conversation with JK and it's coming out in my column tomorrow, and I kind of brought up like basically what we're talking about, like how do you feel about this role of being more focused on the rebounds and being more focused on like the additive things that, you know, that go towards winning instead of maybe more of the ISO stuff. And he said that it was like a weird response that he got, but or something like that. So I'm very interested in what comes out in that column tomorrow to see where his mindset's at, because yeah, I mean, I think we're all kind of noticing the same thing here. Like mm-hmm. he looks awesome, but I think it's because he's kind of, it doesn't almost feel like there was like a compromise. It was like, okay, I'll just do everything that Kerr's been asking me to do this whole time.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, but and then you would kind of wonder, like, what was holding him back? Was it because he was frustrated? Yeah. He didn't really understand. Like, it took him seeing kind of like this nasty side of basketball to figure it out. Like, I don't know.
His credit, though, is that he did do this stuff. I remember he did this stuff in his second year. Players were hurt. But there was a stretch of games in like that second, I think his second year, I think that was the pool getting punched year, because that was after they won the title. And I think that there were just like players missing, whether it was Steph or Dre or something. But he had games down the stretch in like, say, January to March, where he was just like doing this exact thing and getting minutes. And then when the playoffs would come around, Sacramento Kings playoffs, he just wouldn't play. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he maybe gave up on that. He was like, well, I'm doing it. And now, you know, when it comes to important basketball, like, you're pulling me. I'm not getting even, he didn't touch the court against the Lakers, right? Like, he again, in that series, it was mm-hmm. Kings. He got a few opportunities against Alex Len and just got like stuffed at the rim. And then the Lakers series, he didn't even touch the floor. And then the following year, he doesn't get minutes in that Sacramento play-in game until like the third quarter or something. And he does some, or maybe it was right before the half, but it was clear that they weren't going in his direction. And then, you know, he kind of forces their hand because they're just losing to the Kings in the play-in. And then the same thing last year where Steph goes out. And so it's just been like he hasn't been trusted. But I will say, to his credit, he has had moments and stretches where I feel like he's done these things and maybe hasn't been rewarded with the important time, the important play.
But it's got to be consistent and it's got to be sustainable, right? And maybe that is the thing that he's realized, is if he can play consistently and if he can be that high energy guy in a consistent fashion, that is actually what this team needs. And that is where he can stand out in the sea of, as Steph called them, the unks. Did you see Warriors World's shirt did I send that to you?
I don't think so.
So Warriors World has a shirt with Steph. I think it's Steph, Jimmy, Draymond, and Al
Horford.
Kind of dressed up as like OGs, like,
oh, yeah, I do see this.
Pimp daddies, kind of. And
they straight up stole the Clippers thing, because that's what everyone was calling the Clippers in the offseason.
Oh, is that what they were?
Yeah. But I mean, there could be more than one unction.
Yeah.
Because I think, right, we would have been the unction had JK not taken so long to sign that damn contract. Basically, right when Horford signed it, put pen to paper, we were really like, oh, okay, yeah, this team is old now, when we knew he was going to be there like the whole time.
All right, now here's a question. The better JK plays, also, the better it is for his trade market. The better JK plays, the better it is for his fit in the Warriors trying to win another championship. Do you think it's more likely that he gets traded, or less likely that he gets traded if he continues to play at this pace?
I think less likely, but I feel like we've been in this position before, where, like I said, there were moments where he did stuff like this, and then it was like, okay, maybe we shouldn't trade him. And then, you know, Steve kind of takes him out, and it's like, well, we clearly should have traded him because he's not playing in the important moments. I think if you can promise me, which no one can, you can't promise me, I can't promise anyone that he's going to be able to sustain this and he'll stick in the rotation, because we've just been told time and time again that that's just not the case. I would like to think, but it's like, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me three times, fool me four times. But I would like to think that this is going to be sustained and Kerr will keep him at least in the rotation, maybe not the starting lineup, but at least the rotation. Then I think he should stay. But, you know, if it's tough because that kind of feels like the whole song and dance with the young players. It's like they play well and you want to keep them because it looks well good when they're playing well with the starters, and you need that youth, man. You like, the Clippers looked old last night, and we were the team coming off of the back to back. The Clippers looked old. Brooke Lopez and CP3, that unit looks like it stinks. So you need the youth, and the Clippers don't have it, and it felt like it was clear that the Clippers didn't have it. So yeah, like I don't know. I think right now the only guy, like, you need Kuminga or someone with that youth that can take the leap. And to me, like, the only one that's coming to mind that even seems relatively feasible, although I don't think it is Trey Murphy. I just don't see why New Orleans would trade him. But that's like, I can't think of many other names that I think Kuminga's trade value is higher than Coby White's now. Like, I'm glad we didn't do that. But it just felt, it's not because I'd never believed in Kuminga. It was because I didn't believe our coach believed in him. So he would just never get to this level on this team. So it's tough. It's because, yeah, we're just like, what will Steve do?
Yeah. And before we, you know, before we put Kuminga in the MVP race for or the All-Star race, he's got to do it, right? Like, it'll be great to come back next week and to see how he did it against Giannis. I'm sure he's going to get some opportunity to guard him for sure against Indy. So, you know, he's consistency is the key for him. Like, he doesn't have to have these super high peaks where at some points he looks like, you know, one of the best players on the court. Like, that's great if he is. But what he does need and what is going to be so beneficial for him and his PT is just consistency. Just continue to do what he's doing. So there's actually some really good matchups coming up for him, by the way. I don't know if you've looked at the Warriors schedule upcoming. So
I just know it's Bucks in Indiana to close the week.
Bucks, Pacers, Thursday, Saturday. Suns, Kings next week, back to back. And then we get the Nuggets again at the end of next week in Denver. First game of the group stage for the NBA Cup. And then on the 11th, so we're a couple weeks away from that. Thunder, Spurs back to back.
That's rough.
And not only Thunder, Spurs back to back, but it goes Thunder, Spurs, day off, Spurs again.
Jeez.
We get to see Wemby twice.
Jeez, man. But everything before that Thunder thing, so you said it was Milwaukee, Indiana, Sacramento, Phoenix, Denver?
Phoenix, Sacramento, Denver, Phoenix, yeah.
Like, we look at that last year and we're like, can they go 500? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, this year I'm like, there's no reason they shouldn't win out. Like, I think what, 4-1's probably most likely, but that just is just a different team now. It's just like, we could say that, and also, like, it doesn't sound crazy. Like, they should win all those games. They should beat Milwaukee. That Sacramento, Phoenix, those are two teams that just are not playing well right now. Like, they should win those two games. Actually, I haven't even really looked into Phoenix just because I feel like they're going to be bad. So I don't know if they're not playing well or not, but I imagine they aren't that great. And then Denver, you've already beat them once, but it did go to OT, but I don't think Aaron Gordon's going to have another 50-point game. So you'd think that, you know, they can get that game too. And then, yeah, the OKC Spurs one is going to be tough. You just hope that you get one of those. Is this San Antonio thing real? I think Wemby's real for sure, but you know, they went to OT against the Pelicans. I think they're a young team that's going to have, you know, some rough games against some rough teams at times. So we'll see, if, you know, are they for real?
Yeah, they got to play the unction pretty soon, two times. the Eastern Conference is kind of funny because the Sixers of all teams, the two teams undefeated in the East, the Sixers and the Bulls. Obviously the Thunder and then the Spurs also undefeated in the West, but the Bucks, who the Warriors play next, 3-1. So even without some of the players, I think that with Dame not being on this team anymore, and Miles Turner joining this team, and a lot of the players from the previous championship run all gone, They're still doing it. So, and they got three Antetokounmpo brothers.
Yeah, and what's interesting about the Milwaukee team is it was like, we've been doing this podcast since they won in 21-22, like that season. And the following year, we got to see them draft Patrick Baldwin Jr., Ryan Rollins, and Gui Santos. And we covered that. Like, we talked about who these players were. Sure, we didn't know who Ryan Rollins was, but we looked into it and learned who he was, and he's now a key piece on this Milwaukee team.
Good for him, man. He never really had an opportunity with the Warriors because of the same stuff that, you know, JK is dealing with. And JK was a higher draft pick who's going to get more opportunity. Owner loves him. Rollins was just a little bit of like a, just a, you know, kind of a cross your fingers that he can play better than what you expect out of him. But it's awesome that this dude has found a spot. You want to see
that. He was trade filler in that Jordan Poole trade to Washington to get CP3 over here and get off the JP contract. Him and Patrick Baldwin were like trade filler.
Yeah.
So, and now he's on Milwaukee after the shopping incident. I think he got caught stealing from Target. Then he got cut from Washington. Now he's in Milwaukee or something like that.
Who did that?
Ryan Rollins was like shot from Target. Oh. It was just like a dopamine thing too. Like it was like little, it was like like dumb stuff. Like not even, no heists.
First, I thought you said Carmichael. You said Ryan Rollins. Okay, so now you know, we look ahead and you got these upcoming games. Do you think, if you were to kind of project the next five games, do you think the Warriors keep the same great start, or is it kind of like the 49ers where they've created a little bit of padding? They don't have to go after all these games. Do you expect it to be like another 4-1 with the schedule that I mentioned over the next five games? Bucks, Pacers, Suns, Kings, Nuggets.
I think the most interesting game is probably Denver. I'm interested with Milwaukee to see what they do, like attacking the rim. But like I was thinking about, I was like, have they played as good of like a frontline defense that, or the you know, like forward defense and center that Milwaukee has with Giannis and Miles? It's like they did play a former defensive player of the year in Jaren, but I'm interested to see how that goes. But I think it's just Denver again. I think that's going to be the toughest game. Like I think 4-1 is very likely. I think 5-0 would be awesome. But I'm going
3-2.
Why? Like why wouldn't they keep this up? There's no, everyone's healthy. Everyone's playing. Like this isn't the Niners where you lose Fred Warner 1 week, the week before you lose Bosa, the week before you haven't had Purdy and Pearsall. Like they're just injured. Like the Warriors aren't injured.
I'm fully expecting them to lose that Denver game, 'cause it is in Denver.
Okay.
And I know
they lose Milwaukee.
I know Milwaukee is a little bit of a one man team right now. But have you seen some of these Giannis numbers? He's averaging 36.2 points a game in 32.8 minutes, shooting 70% from the field. So he's just getting to the rim, just constantly getting to the rim, getting to the rim, getting to the rim. So, you know, that it's not like the Warriors are super fantastic at guarding him. Like they're gonna struggle with him just as much as everybody else. So I think it's probably a 50-50 game at that point, because Milwaukee is playing better. If the Warriors can actually stay hot from shooting like yesterday, and you know what's actually kind of crazy, Kuminga, Draymond, and Jimmy together, which is a lineup that they would have never played last year, those three guys together are plus 37 right now. And the reason is because all three guys are shooting really well from three-point land.
Yep.
And so you're going to have to duplicate that kind of effort in a game like tomorrow's game against Milwaukee. Is if those lineups, because you're going to have to play big against Giannis.
Yeah, so they start Quinn.
Unless you force Milwaukee to play small and then Giannis just plays center, which he may do anyways. But
Miles is their second best player. I don't see them falling into that trap.
But I mean, that would be a way, you know, that could be a way to kind of attack them.
You think they start Quentin Post on Thursday? Is that tomorrow? That's tomorrow.
Yeah, he doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to start Al. He says he wants Al to come off the bench.
Yeah,
because that also helps with the minutes, the way that they have the minutes laid out. So it's either going to be Post or Pods.
That's what I'm more interested in. Like, what seems to, is this all going to be matchup based throughout the entire year, or are they going to stick with one? Because I do think Quinn Post starts tomorrow, but it feels like Pods is the one you probably stick with because you did it last year. So I don't know.
To go back to your Rollins point, he is a second leading scorer on the team, 15.3 points a game. Gary Trent, AJ Green, it's all guards, by the way. AJ Green, Cole Anthony, Kevin Porter Jr. You have to go all the way down to Kyle Kuzma.
Wait, what the hell is Miles Turner? Is he not playing?
He's played. He's just playing 30 minutes a game, 8.3 points a game, 6.8 rebounds. So I don't know if it's fit. I haven't watched any of their games except to see highlights of Giannis just dunking on everybody. Yeah. And then there was another highlight yesterday where he like traveled about like half of the length of the court. Like, jeez. All right. So we'll move on from the Warriors, but it has been so fun to watch right now. And like I said, at this point in Steph's career, you can't miss a game because you just want to see everything. And so that's where I'm at with Steph. All right, let's talk about some Valkyries and the WNBA. All right, before we get to the CBA stuff, have you been watching any of this any of these international games that I see that are getting posted in our Discord?
I'll turn them on, but I haven't been as locked in as I guess I thought I would with like the Eustay games, the Carla games, you know, the Janelle games. Like I kind of have an idea of how their teams are doing, but you know, I'm forgetting his name on Discord, but he's been locked in.
Yeah, shout out to our guy Casta in the Discord. Just so he's watching for you. He's watching Eustay stuff. He's like pulling this in on how Eustay is playing.
He's a Eustay insider.
Yeah. It's been
another reason though. Another reason to like, I'll just keep promoting that Discord every single time. Like it's a nice little way to just keep in, you know, just basically stay up to date with this stuff. And you know, I've been more active in the past than I have been lately, but I guess the WNBA news has kind of been down. It's just been more CBA stuff as opposed to like hires and more fun stuff.
But yeah, it'll get more fun when they take care of this CBA stuff, which you know, and we're going to talk about it in a second. Like the last time that the last couple times that they've missed the CBA deadline, it's really been early the following year when they actually get a deal done. So it could go that far and we will just be in this like weird space of like nothing going on. But I do think that there should be a little bit more of a sense of urgency because again, and I mentioned this last time, you have this opportunity to really take advantage of this crazy free agent period. And you want, and there's going to be so much more media coming out of that for your league. And you don't want it to be negative. You don't want it to be, they can't get their act together. It's this opportunity and now they're fighting. And oh, now it's the free agent period. Like you want this stuff to be positive. So I'm hopeful that they do get it done sooner than that. But it doesn't sound too promising, at least right now. But before we get to that, I just wanted to mention the Discord itself is really fun. And because we're in this like kind of early stage, and I think we're doing it in the right way where we have a handful of people who are kind of hanging out. We'll get more people, I'm sure, once the WNBA season starts again and maybe during some of this college basketball stuff. But you know, it's kind of a slowly but surely thing. And I like to see who's kind of hanging out and who is posting stuff. And again, shout out to Casta, but there are people who are requesting access and they're joining, but I think they're probably lurking, you know, just to get a little comfortable. Sometimes Discords, you have people who just lurk. I'm totally fine with that as well, as long as everything is cool. But so, you know, hit me up, gg@bspnmedia.com, if you want to come hang out. And I'll also throw a link in this chat. And I'll also, if people request a link in the comments, I will also send a link in the comments to as a reply. All right. So where do we sit right now with this deadline? So Friday, which is in 2 days from as we're recording, is the deadline day to get this thing done. We've heard from both sides that I don't know if the NBA or the WNBA side has said anything specifically, but the player side has definitely said that they do not believe that a deal will be done by that deadline day. So it, by all accounts, it seems like this day is going to come and go and nothing will be done. I believe on Monday, the WNBA owners sent in another proposal. So that was the latest. And I don't know what that proposal, like all the things that was in that proposal, but obviously nothing has happened. So it's not getting to the teeth of what the union wants. I have been kind of following in just certain areas. And what I've learned is it sounds like the last labor deal was really more about a lot of the accoutrements that they need with their safety and with the healthcare and with the mothers and taking care of that stuff. And as we know, they got the better travel a couple of years ago. And so now it seems like this is where they believe is the time that they need to get the money right. And we've been hearing a lot about the what they want to get to, which is a model that is similar to the NBA, where you get this 50-50 split for revenue. And which is why the NBA cap just is constantly going up and up and up, is because every time the league just gets more revenue, half of it goes into the NBA salary cap. So that's what the WNBA wants, because they're like, hey, why does it have to be different? And what we know is that the way that the ownership and the equity around the league is different, which is part of the reason why their current, they don't really have this revenue share in the way that the NBA does. Now, I know that's what they want. And here's my question to you. What if the WNBA ownership group came back and said, let's have a plan, and here's how long we want it to take. In 2 years, here's what the split will be. In 4 years, here's what the split will be, with the idea that it is incrementally going to get up to 50-50, so that the players have like this vision of when they will get to that split. Now, in the meantime, the owners will be able to recoup some of the money that they've invested in this league, because the league has been a money loser so far, overall, historically. So they can recoup some of that in the meantime. But at the same time, when the WNBA gains in popularity, they will also make out because of that. So it is kind of like it is in both of their best interests to really, really make this league work and continue to grow. But do you think a deal like that, where the owners are compromising and promising, like, we're going to get there, it took us, this is what the NBA was for a long time, and here are the steps that it took to get there to where it is today. Do you think that that would be a compromise from any of the things that you've heard? Or do you think the players are more interested in kind of like, you know, $1 million is, you know, is the max salary and things of that nature?
I mean, $1 million max salary is not asking much in comparison to, you know, what the split would even look like. Like, you know, I think what they, of course, like you said, like, if they had it their way, of course the split would be 50-50, but that's just not how, you know, the league has their percentages dished out right now. And I think, you know, it's been mentioned on the Athletic women's basketball show that, you know, while what you said, they, that would be the best thing for them is the 50-50, but it's like, they just want a model that goes up with the league revenue. Like, you know, cause right now they have a fixed percentage where it's like, you, it goes up like 3% increments every year. It's a fixed percentage. But what if next year the WNBA just makes, you know, triple the times of the revenue that, you know, they made the year before?
And well, they still make the
how
same
it's set up right now, it'd still be the 3%. They want it to go up with the revenue. So I think that that's kind of what they're more so looking at right now. And, you know, I think your proposal, like, if there is, I think if there's more honesty and more like long, if that was a type of solution, I think that that would resonate with the players more. But I don't think it's really been that. I think it's just been undershooting what, you know, we even thought was maybe the minimums. It's like 850 max salary. You know, I think we at least thought it was going to be $1 million. Like, at the very least, just, it seems like, sure, the league has been a money loser historically, but I would be so shocked if you went to any owner and been like, well, would you like to sell your share and find new ownership? Because it's been a money loser. So do you want to get out? No one wants to get out. Everyone wants to get in this league.
Well, I think there are some ownership groups, like maybe Connecticut, Who would
they want to get out because they can't? They probably can't afford what this is going to become,
right? And so they've probably invested. They probably have found out that they are not really coming out ahead. But then by selling it, because like you said, there are people who want to get into the league. That's where they may be able to recoup a lot of money.
Yeah. So yeah. The Mohegan Tribe probably, you know, there's probably some. A lot of these are, you know, NBA ownership groups, and I didn't even realize how many were. Like Indiana, Washington. I think I kind of knew that, but it was just, I thought that it was mainly just like Joe Lacob, Matt Ishbia, and the size that were like the big spenders, because they are, but there is more NBA ownership in this league than I thought, and there's going to be more coming in. I just think that, you know, if they say like the historical money loser, I get it, but like, you know, this is going to be very profitable in the long run. And it feels like I'm with the players in the sense that, like, if you don't get it this time, then you're just going to watch the next 5 years go, or however long until you can opt out again. It's going to be a lot of missed opportunity and missed money.
Now, I have not covered the history of labor negotiations in the WNBA, but I have to believe that this is probably the time that the players have had the most leverage, maybe in the history of the WNBA. And you don't want that opportunity to be wasted. So this is why they're probably going to hold as strong as they possibly could, while at the same time understanding that some of these players, you know, they've kind of reconditioned their livelihood, though there are still some WNBA players playing in internationally. But I go back to that Diana Taurasi documentary where, you know, she wins like the WNBA championship and then literally leaves on a plane to Russia like the next day, because that's really where she's making all of her money.
Mm-hmm.
And you want the WNBA to be the main league. Like, it's actually, I'm not saying it's insulting for Billings to be playing overseas. Like, you know, she's hustling. She's making her money knowing that her career is like this finite amount of time. But the WNBA is who should be embarrassed, because they're like, oh, we can't even pay our players enough money to where they can train with their teams and have a proper off season. But maybe they're not embarrassed, because they're like, you know, the better it is to for the player salaries to be down, the better it is for us. The other thing that I was thinking about was the expansion teams. And that's also the difference in the previous negotiations to now, is you kind of want to get it done, because what happens is if you go all the way, let's say they go to February and they finally strike a deal, from February to mid-April, you have to do expansion draft and then collegiate and international players draft. And these two teams that you're wanting to build up, you're not giving them a long runway for the fans to be really excited about these teams, because there's an unknown, right? Do you want to put your season ticket money down if the WNBA is going to miss the beginning of the season because they're locked out, right? Mm-hmm. So you want all that stuff to be resolved so that you can actually go into marketing your two new teams. So that's another part of this that is not accounted for in these other negotiations because of expansion. Like, they are hot. You don't want to stop. You don't want to halt the hotness. They have these two teams coming in. You want to give them the best opportunity to be like the Valkyries were this year. And you have this crazy free agency period that you want to take advantage of from a publicity standpoint, kind of being at the top of the sports center news, right? You know, maybe they're not the lead story, but they can be, you know, right near there with the media stuff. So I do think, well, I think the players have the most leverage. I hope that they're smart enough to, and I think smart is not the right word, because again, you're messing with people's livelihoods and their paychecks. I hope they're patient enough. Patient may not be a great word either, but to just really understand that they do have a good deal of leverage here, and to really, you know, let's get these you know, let's really put some stuff out there publicity wise to show that, hey, you know, maybe we think that, you know, the owners are crying poor here. Maybe they're actually making a little bit more money than people realize, and let's show that information. I think there are interesting things there that they could do, because they do have the advantage that they are the face of the league. Like, nobody knows what Joe Tsai or Joey Lightyears looks like, right? It's really the players. So they can actually do that from a fan perspective to get the sympathy on their side. And yeah. I hope they do it, because I think...
I just wonder, like in terms of, you know, you say the players have the leverage, like what happens when, like, say they don't get the deal done, they're not going to get it done by October 31st, the extension happens, and then this thing, like historically, I guess, doesn't get resolved until the beginning of next year. Well, guess what happens between now and the beginning of next year is Unrivaled. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that plays a factor, maybe Unrivaled, like what if it just gets like insane ratings and then... you can use that as leverage, like, oh, well, you know, we have Unrivaled, and do they leverage the Maverick Carter, you know, $5 billion investment that he's seeking for the men and women's league in Europe? Like that has WNBA former players wanting to invest, like Candace Parker and Lauren Jackson. Like, you know, like you said, Diana Taurasi, and it's not every European country that, you know, makes all this money. It was like the Russia, and I imagine maybe like the China, and
yeah, that was like, I don't know how long ago it was.
And they don't go to Russia anymore because obviously of what happened. But you know, I just wonder if they're just like, if they're like, we're gonna make more money, you know, going elsewhere. Like, I just can't believe that this is as they could just lose. If they leverage stuff like that, if they're like, well, you know, the Maverick Carter thing or the Unrivaled thing, like, I know the Maverick Carter thing is just not really like put out, but there's been athletic pieces, front office sports pieces where it's just, you don't, what if they make more money overseas? Then it's just, what are we doing here?
But you lose the, you really lose the ability to be the face of a sports person in the US, right? Like, I'm sure you get something out of going overseas and playing, you know, maybe there's more money, but when you come back and you get to use your likeness, your celebrity in a way,
and I mean the competitive brand, I think that's what we learned with like Ustay, is that like it's just been like a dream of hers because this is the best league in the world, right? But I think I think that the WNBA will always still be here, but I think they got to stop playing around, man.
And by the way, I don't think that the players have all the leverage. I think they have the most leverage they've ever had, so they do have to take advantage of it, right? They cannot be pushovers here because and cry and let the owners cry foul because they haven't made as much money and they've been, look, it is an investment, right? If you can invest money in anything, and you know, playing for the long run versus playing for short-term games, like that is part of investing. So that's what I'm saying is the WNBA ownership can't say, well, we need to get all of our money back first before we can then pay the players more. That's not how it works. You don't have to get all of your money back. You can have plans to, you know, to grow the players' pool slowly but surely, or maybe not even slowly but surely, maybe just over a span of time so they can physically see and they can actually make some calculations about what that money's going to be like, especially as the league grows. They are the ones seeing all of the people in the buildings. They are the ones seeing that the Valkyries sold out every single game. And that is a difference from how it was 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And they can see that as well. They can see the expansion fees that these ownerships are getting. They can see the owners who want to come into the league. So that means that there's money and that there's investment coming in. So I would just, I'm not playing with this ownership crying foul and, you know, we're poor and all this stuff. I would not really take that for face value. I think that's just a politician ploy. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the coaches. I just want to go over the new coaches in the league right now because there have been some hires. Portland Fire They hired Alex Sarama, extensive background working in European and international men's and women's professional basketball.
Cleveland Cavs assistant.
Assistant coach for Cleveland Cavs. The Fire's front office cited his track record of creating intelligent decision makers. Okay. And his comfort operating as a coach for an expansion franchise. So the Portland Fire has their first Portland have a team before?
Yes.
So they're reintroduced franchise. So then this one's the interesting one. The Dallas Wings hired Jose Fernandez, college coach, last 25 years at South Florida. This is going to be the person who's got the keys to the Paige Becker's car here. Kind of interesting. I thought they would get a little bit of a bigger name, but I guess he was also interviewed for the job last year, so they must have liked what they saw, though he didn't get the job last year, so I don't know it, why, but he's going to be Paige's coach, and he'll probably get another good young player based on the upcoming draft.
He likes apparently like an international focus, so I wonder if Miss Awa Fam goes higher than I think she should be number one or number two, and maybe the actual draft will reflect that now.
Seattle Storm have Sonia Rahman, who was an assistant for the Liberty and also coached at the NBA level with the Grizzlies. And she was the coach at MIT for a while. So first person of Indian descent to be a WNBA head coach, which is pretty cool. And then Toronto Tempo, their very first coach is Sandy Brundello, who was, unceremoniously removed as the head coach of the New York Liberty 1 year after winning the WNBA championship. She also coaches the Australian national team. Obviously, she's there to immediately establish culture and all the things that go with being an expansion team franchise. But it's kind of the opposite of what the Valks did, right? The Valks went with somebody who was younger, somebody who was their first job, and versus Sandy Brundello, who's a vet. So just different strategies in getting your
ear. Yeah, Seattle basically mimicked the Golden State strategy where it's like former like NBA experience to WNBA assistant experience to WNBA head coach.
All right. Let's end
this. I like all the hires. I know
even Jose.
I actually really do like him. He's very well respected by his peers, by Gino. Like I think he's very involved in like I looked into him and like, I think there was, I'd have to come back and maybe talk about it next week if I could find it again, but it just seems like he's very, interactive and wants to grow the game and like has that type of mindset that, and I like all of the hires, even, the Sarama, the guy's British. I didn't even like, I heard him talk during the press conference. It's like, you don't really hear too many British accents in this game, him and Temi.
Yeah. Okay. Last segment, this will be really short, just to kind of celebrate women's college hoop also starting. Who do you think has the better season this year between the former teammates, Olivia Miles and Hannah Hidalgo?
Who has the better season?
Yeah.
Probably TCU.
Think so.
Olivia Miles. I mean, just Notre Dame, it feels like they lost so much with not as much incoming. Like they lost Citron, they lost Westbelt, they lost Olivia Miles because they were all seniors. I think they lost a couple more too, but it's just, I think Hidalgo's a dog. Like she comes to Stanford and Berkeley this year. I would like to go watch her play.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the TCU move for Olivia was, I think they had mentioned it with the No Offseason Pod had mentioned it with Haley Van Lith last year, but that they kind of have this super old roster that like almost rivals like WNBA age limit to enter the league. Like they just have a really old roster that's kind of plays like a WNBA roster would. So there's value and maybe going there to get adapted to that type of environment and that type of play style. And I think that play style definitely favors Olivia Miles' game. So I think TCU, just because they're older and Olivia Miles is a floor raiser, you know, great playmaker, I think that they'll have more success than Notre Dame.
But do you think she has a better season than Hannah?
That was the question. That's a tough one. I would lean yes, but I don't say that confidently. I think Hannah could just have a crazy year, given that she's like the primary person.
Right. And so, here's the reason why I asked this question. I was reading Chantel Jennings'
Welcome back, Chantel. I would love to hear her on the No Offseason Pod again. It's been a while. Yeah.
She had her the women's college basketball All America team. And so she picked for her first team, she picked Sarah Strong, Lauren Betts, Madison Booker, Hannah Hidalgo. And then as I was scrolling down, I was like, oh, and then it's going to be Olivia Miles. Nope. Michaela Blakes from Vanderbilt was her other first team. And you got to go down to second team. You know who else is not on the first team? Flage was on the second team.
Daisy.
Olivia Miles, AZ Fudd, Tania
Latson,
and who's the last person here? Cody McMahon? Cody?
Oh, okay. Did she transfer? We watched her play. She's Ohio.
Yeah, Ole Miss.
She transferred to Ole Miss.
So that was interesting. I was like, wow, I didn't, you know, I would have assumed Olivia Miles would have been right there with Hannah Hidalgo on the preseason first team, but... she wasn't. She was on the
side. I bet you it was. I imagine it was a tough decision, and I imagine it wasn't like easy. That wasn't like an easy, because I think that's the two that you have to think about right there. That Hannah has, you know, full green light, the entire team to herself, so she could theoretically put up more individual stats. I don't really know TCU's roster, but I just know that Olivia is going to thrive and play well in that type of roster, because of what the coach, you know, wants.
All right, we got a lot of stuff done on this show, so appreciate folks hanging out. Listening on the audio feed, watching on YouTube.
Doesn't this college season start like on Monday or something?
Is that when it starts? I mean, I saw tons of women's college stuff in The Athletic, so that's why.
Should we try to go when we're in Arizona, or is not enough time?
Who does Arizona play when we're there?
See, I don't even know if they're home or not.
Oh. They're
in a good conference. Are they going to have a good team? We'll see. Becky, I'm excited for Becky Burke's first year as the coach. She's got what's that Lions head coach name? That the guy just like full energy.
Dan Campbell.
Yeah. Not that I don't think she's anywhere close to Dan. I think Dan's just a different animal out there. Yeah. But she kind of brings that like we got this like positive vibes type of vibes.
Yeah, we should go see as much as we possibly can. So this year, especially with, it's just unfortunate that Cal and Stanford aren't in that echelon of teams that are going to be really good. San Jose State's dog meat, but
Stanford does have some top recruits this year. They might be on track to becoming like a good program again post, you know.
I've never been to Stanford gym, by the way.
I went last year. It was cool.
And I've never been to the Berkeley gym, I don't think, either.
I have not either. I think that's the Haas Pavilion or something.
Yeah. You know who has? I bet you Proc Daddy could get us in.
Yeah.
We should hit him up.
Yeah.
All right. That is it from here. We'll be back next week to talk more Warriors, more Valks, more WNBA. Hopefully there will be some sort of forward progress in those CBA talks. For Bry, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.